You're listening to the Table of Malcontents, where Aaron Armstrong, Dave Schrader, and Barnabas Piper talk about the books they love and a few they really don't to help you be a better reader. Hey everybody, welcome to the Table of Malcontents. I'm Aaron, and with me of course is Dave. What's up, Dave?
I'm feeling it, man. I need some coffee though, but I'm feeling it. Yeah.
Yeah, you're
so impressed. I just threw the bathroom because I've been drinking water all afternoon, and that's okay.
You just want
that's
to take fine. This podcast without you for like no, 2 to 7
no.
minutes?
No. I'm going to stay sharp here. That's
okay.
It.
You're
going to
power through this? You're just going to hold it?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
There you go.
Let's make this a shorter one, folks.
Sweating bullets over there.
that's right. And of course, Barnabas as well. Barnabas, how you doing?
It's Friday afternoon, and we're going to power through this thing.
That's right. All right. So today, we are talking about our reading testimonies.
Right away, we just lost everyone.
I know. Everybody's just eyes rolled back.
No. This is that special time when,
I'll jump in. I'll jump in.
Save the Canadian from himself, please.
I'm tired too, guys.
We're going to share stories about how we have fallen in love with reading or different genres, perhaps, or just particular books
kept
that
us
I've had.
Loving reading after we stopped for a while when we were reading Apostates to continue Aaron's theme. Am I boring anyone yet?
No, you're on.
No,
right
it's
on.
Fine. It's fine.
No. Absolutely. Okay. We're gonna go around and share about that. So,
all right. We're gonna go around the circle. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. Yeah, I'll go first. All right, I'll start. My mother is an editor by trade. That's what she's still alive. She doesn't do much anymore, but which basically means I was a terrible writer even then growing up, and she helped me be. A good moderate, okay writer to the point where I could get through school. So it helped with that. But the other thing is, my mom was great. You know, it's parenting that we talk about our kids a lot about how you get introduced to reading because someone influencing you loves it themselves. So my mom's a voracious reader, and there were constantly books around the house. But it wasn't like it was this thing. Oh, I'm dying to read because I'm a kid. But suddenly it takes a book by Lois Lowry. It was, there was a few books during when I was about 9, 10, 11, like Number of the Stars. The Giver had not come out yet, but Number of the Stars I thought was fantastic, which is funny because here's this boy who's reading about this girl in Holland, right?
I haven't read that
one. Yeah, or Denmark. Denmark, sorry, which is outstanding. And, in the Holocaust, protecting, other a Jewish family. And it was, I don't know, I just suddenly, I started, first time I felt like, okay, I was associating with what a character would go through in a situation, which I loved. There was something about that just was great, but it's not like I caught on to reading at that point. Like all I did was read. I was never that type of reader. And it wasn't until it suddenly became absolutely personal. Freshman year of high school, I was forced, like most kids in America, forced to read To Kill a Mockingbird. So I read it in my
Did
first
you say
high school.
Tequila Mockingbird?
Tequila Mockingbird?
That sounds like
an
one
interesting high school right there.
That sounds like one I would have liked to have read.
In Kansas, that's the way it was. I had to read it because I moved in like November 1st. And so I read it in Kansas City, and then I read it again when I was in St. Louis. So I did great on the tests, as you can imagine, because I was reading it over and over again. But it was also just like suddenly you read a book that you associate with, of knowing what it's like to be on the outside and then looking in someone else's shoes because you just walked in being a new kid. And so I think at that point on, I always was highly alert to if there's a new kid in school, take care of them, whatever, make them feel welcome, because I knew how that felt. And it was a book that introduced that idea to me. But it's funny, I mean, certainly we were forced to read so much growing up, just in school. So I didn't really do much with reading after that because other than when I was required to read, I don't remember reading for pleasure in high school after that much. Or even through college, I dabbled a little bit. But think about it, we were all exhausted. We were forced to read so much. Which I'm not saying I hated. I certainly liked a lot of my classes, but...
But most of the books you're assigned to read in college are not ones that make you go, man, I love reading.
Absolutely.
Like, they're just information dumps.
I know. It's like detox after I got out of college.
Yep.
And so, but I remember like this like level of freedom. It was 6 months. I traveled for like 6 months. And then when I got back to St. Louis, I was at like a friend's house and I'm like looking at this bookshelf and I realized like, dang man, there's some really cool stuff here, you know? And I'm like looking through this collection of books and cause I really hadn't read much at all. And finally, you know, I think my friend's dad gave me Undaunted Courage. Talked about that before, Stephen mm-hmm. Ambrose's book mm-hmm. on Lewis and Clark.
Yep.
Which I'm like, I always was interested in history, but man, talk about good narrative history. Stephen Ambrose.
If they had taught history in college like that, maybe you would have read more.
Absolutely. Yeah.
True.
It's called words, left to right. Words to make a sentence. Right. Everything all comes down to David Spade after a while. So yeah, no, I'll stop there, you know, with it. But I think it's just interesting. To me, it was like these pieces of time. Like it was really big in that time and suddenly like, wow, a book can really do something in you because it becomes personal. It was personal as a kid and those multiple times. And then suddenly I realized like, okay, after college, I'm on my own. Like it, like my learning is on me. You know, there's no one like pushing me
through.
And
you realize how little you actually know and learn in college.
Yeah, you realize like, man, I've learned so much from 22 and on.
Yeah.
Because I tried so hard just to get what I needed out of it for a test. That's all it was. So I don't know. There's a lot more we to keep talking about, but what do y'all got?
You want me to go next?
You're up.
I'm up. Fantastic. Okay. Well, so I honestly, there wasn't a time when I didn't love reading. So, I didn't really read a lot of stuff that was directed at my age. Like, so I always read grown-up books.
You read above your level, more or less. Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. What do you mean by grown-up?
So books that were, or at least books that were marketed toward that were not marketed toward children. So,
quick side note.
Yeah.
YA is like the biggest genre now.
It's
like an inverse now in so many ways.
Absolutely.
Sorry,
but I mean,
and the only reason it's called young adult fiction, as Dave and I know as marketers, is because you have to aim it at something. But because young adults won't read it if you call it just fiction.
It's YA.
Yes, but adults will read it.
It's PG-13.
Yeah.
That's what it is, right?
Yeah,
there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So,
it's kind of the appropriate for all ages mostly.
There you go. So, I mean, there
you can spend money.
There's lots of trash books that I read, like... Trash books.
Whoa. What trash books come to
what
mind?
What is a trash book?
Our guilty Canadian friend.
Well, trash books were Media Italian novels.
Media Italian?
Media tie-in novels.
Well, they said meaty Italian novels.
So think back when pocketbooks still existed as a separate organization instead of an imprint of Simon & Schuster. And they may not even exist at all anymore. But they're like Star Trek novels and stuff like that, for example.
So you start with the audiovisual as the lead, but you have all these little separate things.
Yeah, the stuff that doesn't count, but they just want to make more cash.
Yeah, I remember reading a number of books about Boba Fett at one point in my life.
Yeah.
Those were utter trash.
That's what I'm talking about.
I feel like pheromones showed up in all of them. That's my recollection.
It's amazing. To be fair, most Star Wars media is... Media tie-ins are trash, and the movies are just what they are. So
right, but I mean, I just mean like there's a certain flavor of trash. It's like if you have rotting chicken in your garbage can, it's one kind of trash. If you have rotting cantaloupe, it's another kind of trash.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just like it's popcorn stuff. It's not CSI novels, which Dave is showing us on his screen. But that's a good, relatively current example. If you know, you'll see stuff that's based on CW stores in the YA section.
Have you always loved sci-fi? Has that always been like
your... always been a thing? See, I watched from early age, I was watching Star Trek reruns on the CBC on Sunday mornings.
Canadian Broadcasting something?
Corporation. That's right. So
it's the one channel in Canada.
We had a few more, thank you. But I mean, that was like, I loved stuff like that. The first movie I was ever brought to was actually Return of the Jedi. Yeah. So
when did that come out?
1983. So I was just about to turn 4 because we went to see it for my dad's birthday.
Was it a Christmas movie?
No, it was an August summertime movie.
I was just about to turn 6 months old.
There you go. There you go.
You're 83? 83. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So 79.
78.
There you go.
Shabam.
There you go.
What's it like to be old, guys?
You know,
I'm impressed with your respective memories.
I mean, dude, I had cataract surgery this week, for crying out loud.
Is that where
cataracts? That's
why there's blood running down your face.
I'm telling you, man.
I thought it's because he's like looking
the
up.
I take for my authors. Come on.
You look like the guy from James Bond and the Casino Royale.
Yes.
What was his name? Receipt.
Yes. The
seeping tear duct.
Yeah. Oh man.
So I read stuff like that, and then I'd read some stuff that was assigned to us in school, like Call of the Wild and various Farley Mowat books and things like this. Did you all read Farley Mowat down here?
I think so. Okay. I know the name.
It's kind of like Jack London, but
okay,
yeah, that kind of deal.
I did read a lot of Jack London.
Yeah, so same lane,
gotcha.
Basically. Okay. So I'd read stuff like that. I was reading comic books, forever. I still remember one of the very first ones that I ever remembered reading was a Marvel What If book that was What If Conan the Barbarian was transported to 1980s New York. It was weird.
Okay.
It was weird.
Okay.
It was weird. I'm not.
There are no limits to fiction.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah.
Sometimes fiction is, in fact, stranger than truth.
Yeah.
It's true. It's true.
Maybe not in politics, but in fantasy.
Arnold Schwarzenegger in that outfit.
No, but it wasn't.
There was no Conan yet.
No, Conan predated the Arnold movie.
No, I know. I'm just like, it's hard like for that visual to escape you.
So he was obviously a model of the character to some degree, but it was more the black haired version of Conan versus blonde Austrian Conan.
Oh. Conan. Yeah.
So stuff like that, there's a Gil Kane Superman comic that actually got reprinted in the Action Comics retrospective.
Okay.
Earlier this year.
Did you ever have a time where you kind of fell out of love for reading?
For me, it was more I went in and out of different kinds of reading. So and that, interestingly, was more actually after I became a Christian.
Because you started reading stuff that you thought you were supposed to and then realized it was really boring or something like that?
There was a little bit of that, actually.
I speak from personal experience on that.
No, that actually is a little bit of it.
I'm not going to extract that one.
Is that it was, I read a lot of fiction. I read a lot. Like, I worked in a bookstore during college, so.
I'm jealous.
I know. It was fun. I mean, my first job was at a comic book store.
I applied to, 20 different bookstores for jobs over the years and never got one.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But
did they give you an opportunity to kind of show who you are, or was it just a typical application where it's
facts? This is when I was before high school, college, so I was back Borders, B. Dalton, Barnes and Noble.
Yeah.
There's only so many ways you can say I love books on an application, but I never even got a callback.
Yeah. Man, that's rough. They should have.
Well, I mean, I've been in publishing since 2005, so clearly I ended up doing okay on the getting into the book business front.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. So,
but that would have been a killer job at that point.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So, I mean, I one of the things I loved about working at a bookstore is we could actually borrow books too from the store.
Really?
Yeah. And so we had to keep them in pristine.
Was this a big chain or was this?
Yeah, it was a big chain.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Can it be named?
It was part of the Chapters Indigo family of bookstores in Canada.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
They'd let us take books with us.
They're going to send the Mounties.
That's
after
why they're out of business now. Because they let Aaron and his compadres borrow.
Chapters and Indigo, they're not out of business.
I'm just kidding. Yeah. Just bookstore. Yeah,
that's true.
Bookstores as a whole are a bit of a struggling industry.
That's true. That's true. As a working for an organization that is the last man standing in for chain Christian bookstores.
Hey, let's not be sexist.
Okay. Last chain standing. Last chain standing. Thank you. I mean, that's where I discovered a guy named Greg Rucka, who's was a crime novelist in the late 90s, early 2000s. You know, his stuff. I dabbled with some Robert Ludlum, and you know, just found some other random things.
Which you did not enjoy.
I did not enjoy. Okay. I did not enjoy.
Not everybody can have good taste.
The worst, you know. Man. Sorry.
Sorry.
You didn't enjoy Robert Ludlum.
I avoided the Harlequin romance section like the plague and tried to make sure that no one bought stuff from there as well. And
have you ever read one of those books?
I actually have.
I have as well.
I checked
one out from the library worst. One time because I was like, what is going on with these books? Because
it's hilarious.
They are always bestsellers. Like in terms of sheer volume, they outsell the Bible. Like they outsell everything combined.
It's crazy.
So I know it's funny. I of course I get a story in this. My godmother passed away a few weeks ago, which not funny, but what was very funny, she was also a voracious reader. Not
so,
funny.
So somebody I knew died.
No, she lived a wonderful life. No, but she was, she read so many of those novels. So we had like this celebration for her, and it was like a wedding reception, essentially. So just think of dance floor, you know, people giving speeches, but all the centerpieces of the tables were all of her dirty novels stacked up. I mean, it was great. So my niece is like, flipping through them, I'm like, no.
She's like, I'm deeply uncomfortable.
I know. It's classic.
All I can think of is the adjectives that were used in those.
Oh, man.
Heaving.
Yeah. Men,
lots of throbbing, pulsating, heaving.
Yep. Men writing
stuff
those are the worst. Oh, my gosh.
They're terrible. Well, because it's like, okay, are you actually, like, are you writing this legit? Are you mocking it? Because, like, if you're mocking it a little bit, it's like, okay. I got to say, it actually turns out that someone I know started writing some of that stuff.
Here?
No.
Under
a
name.
Works for a different name.
Works for the Gospel Coalition.
No, someone I actually
Carter.
Used to. Yeah. That's Joe's other life. No.
So bad.
Possibly Colin Hanson. Trying to make a little money on the side.
Well, you know, he does work for the Gospel Coalition.
I just guess.
thankfully, he doesn't listen to this podcast either.
That's why I'm throwing out names. Remember, we can mock anyone who doesn't listen.
That's true.
So good.
If you don't want to be mocked, just let us know that you're listening. Yeah. That's how this works.
Call us out publicly. That's fine.
That's right. Just shame us.
We'll accept all of that.
It's fine. So I mean, I had my brief time where I just stopped reading fiction for a while. And there was a period of time where I stopped reading comic books for a while, too. And it wasn't because I didn't like them. It was actually because I had to make the choice between what I could buy and what I couldn't. And I had to choose between making sure that I had groceries and, to feed my small family at the time.
Because library is not good enough, things like that. I mean, you've already read them or something like that.
Some of that Got stuff. It. But
libraries, I mean, as deep as Aaron goes on comic books, I can't imagine most libraries have a selection.
There's not a ton.
Fancy.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. And so it was just one of those things. Because I mean, I worked in Christian ministry at the time, which meant I made no money.
Yeah.
Shocker.
So I know.
clearly you didn't have enough faith. You should have named that and claimed that.
I worked for the wrong kind of ministry, but one that all you know. Anyway.
And you were getting paid in Canadian dollars.
That's true, too. But, you know, I always have like always had everything wrong.
That's right. Getting paid in yen. Canadian yen.
Come on. It's only worth, you know, 70% of what our dollar's worth down here. So, anyway. So that's just more. And then I got challenged to start reading fiction again in 2012.
What does that mean? Got challenged.
So
like a friend was like, "What are you doing?"
A friend and coworker was like, "Hey, you're reading a lot of this kind of stuff. You need to read something else." So she actually said,
"All theology, weren't you?"
Like theology, nonfiction stuff, things like that. And so she said, "I want you to take the entire summer and only read fiction." And so I said, "Okay, I'll do that."
You know how, like, if you take your kid to the mall or to a department store and, like, you have to try on stuff and they just get more and more bored until they just sort of collapse into a puddle on the ground? That's the way I feel.
That's actually me when I take my family shopping.
Right, exactly. But I mean, like, so your kid or you, that's how I feel when I imagine only reading theology.
Yeah.
I think that's
like,
fair.
I'm literally physically slumping in my chair. Yeah. I can't take the weight of that idea. It sounds so depressing.
Well, I mean, part of the tough thing is a larger conversation for another time, I think. But I'm just gonna throw this out. But part of the problem with that is that so many folks are basically just writing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
Amen.
Yeah.
That is so true.
That's all I'm going to say for now.
Yeah.
Yep. There's no difference between theology books and leadership books when it comes to how they come about. Like it is 1,000 different ways of packaging the same stuff, generally speaking. And when one stands out, either for how it's written or what it says, like it really stands out.
Right. And I could be justifying my existence here working for a book publisher because, there's sometimes we'll publish a book that I know like, yeah, somebody's already published something on that topic or dozens of times, whatever it may be. Then I'm reminded there's a lot of people who are only going to follow that particular person, and this may be the first time they hear about that type of message.
Right.
But we read a lot more widely than that particular person we're talking about. Right. That's the difference right there. The point we're saying, gosh, like after a while, like you're right. Like, I mean, certainly we all need to be reading about grace and a variety of things in terms of theological topics, but... To be challenged as we kind of grow as readers, you have to expand upon.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. Yeah. Or you end up becoming cynical.
Yeah.
Too.
So, which we all have a little of that.
Which, too. Absolutely. So it's okay. Absolutely.
That's so, me, with perspective.
Yeah, with the exception of Barnabas.
Who you're criticizing.
we got Barnabas Osteen Piper over here.
Living my best life now, every day of Friday.
That's right.
It is a Friday.
It sure is.
Yeah. Spinning and making money. Here we go.
Oh, gosh. So good. All right, Barnabas, we need yours, man.
Yeah. It's funny listening to you guys because the more I think about it, the more I realize... Wow, I lived in a really weird home because like the amount of books that surrounded my life it's immeasurable the way that like books and reading were just inundated everything.
Quick thing for both of you. You did not have a television in your house for the most part, right?
I remember you saying that about you.
I had a television.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was a big old one of those ones that was furniture.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Okay, I'm just curious. You know, sometimes that affects. But keep going, Barnabas. Sorry.
So we did not have a television. That was going to be part of what I said. And my parents weren't like morally opposed. That it wasn't like some crazy legalistic thing. But they just their argument was if we have a television, we'll watch it, and then we won't do other things that are more worthwhile. Reading books being one of those things. So I did much more playing outside, playing sports, and reading books than anything else. But I mean, I remember at preschool age walking the 4 or 5 blocks to the Franklin Library, so it was part of the Minneapolis Public Library system, for story time. So you go down to their weird little like musty smelling basement room, with the barred windows, and one of the librarians would read us a story. And then we'd get to go upstairs, and my mom had the tote bag, and she'd return the books from last week, and we'd check out new books, and I had whatever the limit was. And, there's usually a lecture about both being quiet in the library and not losing the books that you checked out. And so, going to the library was a thing that just was part of life.
Yeah.
Being read to. My mom read to us all the time, even when I was up into, middle school.
Yeah.
Because we would – so she'd do all the laundry. So there'd be a mountain of laundry the size of, a small car. Mm-hmm. Because there was 4 boys in the house. And then she would read to me and my brother or brothers while we folded laundry. So we're sitting there like folding dad's pit stained undershirts while she's reading Stephen Lawhead books to us, which, by the way, are great for preteen boys, because I got to learn what like being drawn and quartered was. I got to learn about the process of removing a barbed arrow from someone's flesh. Like they're cool war stories with a Christian basis, but not super preachy.
Yeah.
And like that was just sort of the environment. She was always listening to audiobooks. She had entire shelves of like Agatha Christie and various other mysteries. And then, of course, my dad, being a theologian and a writer, like, we had custom shelves built into our upstairs to hold all of his books, and there would be overflow that would go to the church and be given away or whatever. And they both wrote books. And so, like, the more I think about it, the more I'm like, if I didn't love reading, it was simply an act of, like, it would be
like, willful.
Yeah, just like, oh, I just hate my family.
Right.
Like, I'm just not going to do this family. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it just sort of came naturally. And so I don't have a ton of seminal moments of like this book turned me on to reading. It was more just like I just read constantly.
Yeah.
I do remember. So for me, it was more like that was just sort of a thing that I did. College was hard because I'd never liked assigned reading. I never enjoyed a book that I was assigned at any point ever. So, like, I was assigned to read The Great Gatsby as a junior, sophomore in high school, and I hated it. Read it again, like, 5 years ago. It's like, oh, that is one of the greatest American novels ever. I apparently was a moron at 15. Who knew?
it's a hard one to read at that age.
Which is...
Yeah.
It is.
And the teacher, I think, if my recollection was that she did a pretty good job trying to draw us into a fairly complex thing.
Mm-hmm.
But 15-year-old boy, not exactly the target demo for Great Gatsby. But I switched schools almost every year of high school, which means I skipped some of the classics, which worked to my benefit because then I read them when I wanted to read them. So I read To Kill a Mockingbird in my mid-20s or like late-20s and was completely floored by it. Mm. If I had read it on assignment at 16, I probably would have hated it on principle.
Yeah.
So books like that didn't work as well with Catcher in the Rye. Read that one in my mid-20s and was like, oh, Holden Caulfield's a brat. I hate him. So, whereas other people I know read it and thought it was this sort of seminal coming-of-age story. But getting out of college was really freeing for me because I thought I was supposed to read theology. I thought I was supposed to be an intellectual. I was assigned a bunch of books. And so I was reading all sorts of like theologians and philosophy and stuff and probably becoming maximally insufferable because of it. And like 4 or 5 years later, stumbled across the Harry Potter series, which of course was a phenomenon and I was just late to the game, and was reminded that fiction and kids' stories are the best books. They're just the best books.
You should never stop reading.
Right. And I had read like every C.S. Lewis thing ever, but those are the ones that helped me realize that when he says, you know, basically if you can grow out of a book, it was never worth reading in the first place. I don't remember the exact quote, but a book.
Yeah, I like that.
What do you say? A book worth reading at 10 should be worth reading at 50. And if it's not, it wasn't worth reading in the first place. That kind of idea. And I read those books and I'm like, these are aimed at 10-year-olds. At least the initial ones, and I loved them as an adult. So that, and then what that allowed me to do is also begin to re-engage things like theology in a way that was more, that was less sort of assignment and pretentious or trying to form myself into something, and more a, what does my soul need? So being able to go back and read books that were timely and good for what my soul, my mind, my intellect, or as part of a community. And so it just became a more, just became kind of a richer reading life. But
yeah,
I don't think I ever could have escaped reading, just thinking back on it, between the audiobooks that my mom had going all the time. Like, the number of British female voices I remember coming out of the cassette player in our kitchen while she made dinner or worked on, just did whatever around the house. It was constant.
Yeah.
And she's still like that. Like, she carries her iPhone on a strap around her neck while she goes and does things around the house playing audiobooks. Constantly, and she's 70 something years old now, so it's like that's just a lifelong thing. And so I look at that, I'm like, yeah, there was no escaping this. Books were just going to be a thing.
That's awesome. You know,
cool.
It's actually something I really like. Like you saying, you know, the library trip being a regular staple in your life. I remember when I was in kind of my middle school, high school years, we lived in a town called Kitchener, and that was our Friday night. Was we would go to the library, and we would grab, you know, we'd grab a stack of books, and you know, that's what we would do. And so we'd go the next week, return whatever we had already read, take out some new stuff, and then just it was just a constant.
Oh yeah, I said at preschool, I kept that up all the way up through probably middle school because I mowed through like all the Hardy Boys books.
Yeah,
at this point there was like 190 of them, you know, because they're just churning. Yeah. They did was like go through and change the places.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
And you know, sports.
They're a templated book, just like Nora Roberts' books. Oh yeah,
sports biographies, all this stuff. And when that didn't, once I got old enough and I'd used up all the books at that library, I would take the city bus that I could catch right in front of my house and take it to the downtown library, which had, you know, 80,000 times as many books and could expand my reading even more. So, yeah, that just became like I still like to this day, libraries are, I don't know, I just get giddy going into libraries. Yeah. Like I get a stomach ache going into an elementary school. Because I hated every minute of that, and I get like gleeful going into a library, and that has been the case since I was, you know, five. Mm-hmm. I'm the same person as I was as a 5-year old.
See, I get really psyched going into used bookstores, like, and I have ever since I was like in my teens.
That always feels like a, I mean, treasure hunt is a little strong, but I mean, it's just sort of like the possibilities here are endless. Just the stacks of books and the smell and the close aisles.
Mm-hmm. I never understood used bookstores until maybe the last 10 years, if I'm really honest. And part of it's because I appreciate
we
not
live
just
near a really good used bookstore around here.
Okay.
Well,
of course. But, it's like it's discovery. I mean, I love collecting. Like, I do. Like Brooke and I are discussing not fighting over at all. Just the fact of like building new bookshelves and stuff like that. And I get a ton from the library, and I get a ton over. I'm like, but I'm still like, there's some like I want to get. A lot of times I go to the library, I'll buy it. I mean, I'll of course just try it out, love it, then I'm gonna buy the book because I want it for reference and I want to reread it at some point. Mm-hmm. So. But there's just something about that, and I love used bookstores now. So
not every book is worth owning, especially you know, if you have limited space. So libraries are fantastic for like, I mean, the amount of like John Grisham and Jeffrey Deaver and David Baldacci and whatever else. Like I used to buy all those paper books when I would travel. I'd pick them up at like airport bookstores. Mm-hmm. And after a while, I was like, that's $8 a trip for a stack of books that like it's basically Kindling at this point. I'm never going to use it.
Yes.
I should probably just go to the library before I travel. You can check out five of them, throw one in your bag, off you go. Yep. They don't even care if you return them and the corners are all beat up because it's going to happen eventually. So
that's true.
God bless libraries.
Absolutely. Gosh. Yes, absolutely. Every time I'm in the library, it's so busy. I love it. No, I mean, really, I last couple of public libraries I've been in, like outrageously busy. Yeah. When they're financial downturn 2008, 2009, roughly around that time, I remember libraries just start picking up again. You know what I mean? Working in the industry, it was just fascinating how distributors to libraries were doing really well again for that reason, because libraries are buying.
Yeah.
Until budgets still were getting cut. But like people, I'm glad. I mean, so there you go.
Yeah. Well, one of the things
stories.
Yeah. And one of the things that I'm glad about is that because there are so many books around our house, we do still have a TV in our place. But our kids, like half the time, they'll just sit around reading when they're not off playing and doing other things.
Yeah.
You know, they have a read aloud time during their school day since we homeschool. And, but they'll sit down in a row on the couch and we'll all be reading, you know, different levels of comic books sometimes. or
Nerdfest.
It is a bit of a nerd fest, but it's amazing. You know, they'll be doing stuff like that. They'll be, you know, my oldest daughter, she loves this series called The Land of Stories. And
yep, one of my daughters, my older daughter, loves that series as well. That's like it's fun to have kids who are getting into the discovering mm-hmm. books, partly because you can give recommendations, partly because they bring you recommendations.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Some of which I'm very skeptical about because 12-year-olds don't have great taste.
They tend to not.
But sometimes they bring one and you're like,
yeah,
that's pretty intriguing.
So what's one that you found?
Well, The Land of Stories is one that like I had never heard of before, and my daughter Grace brought that one back. She just gravitates towards like all the middle school-y like drama kinds of books, and drama is maybe my least favorite thing in the world. of all the things that I dislike, it's probably tops on the list. But she has also learned that when I give her a recommendation, maybe I like good books. Yeah. So like I forced her to read Island of the Blue Dolphins a year or two ago. Mm. She just was fighting me, and I was like, no, you're not doing it. You're not going to read any other books. You're not going to do anything until you read this. Six pages in, she was like, it's pretty good. And after she finished, she was like, yeah, you were right. And I was like, please remember this moment. I'm not trying to give you assignments. I'm trying to help you have fun.
Mal is reading it for school right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My kids, I don't think even I've read that book. So I think.
Yeah, I haven't. Yeah, she's
been reading it. I think we're all going to have to read it.
Okay. But, that's good to know.
I haven't read it in years, but I remember enjoying it.
Yeah, we did. What was one of the ones that they did as a family? The kids all went through Andrew Peterson's Wing Feather series.
I read those.
They're really good. Yeah. I mean, the first one in particular.
We should do an entire episode on best books for like 12 and under.
I think we will.
Yeah,
I think we
definitely
will.
Because otherwise, we're just going to keep going all evening tonight. And it's Dave's about to wet himself, and I'm sweating bullets.
No, that's true. But on that note,
all of our kids are
time.
In that zone, which is really fun. So I end up talking about them a lot of these, and I'm like, let me read it with you. There's been some that have been new to me that I've read that they've been assigned to read or a friend's recommended them, which I think is really funny when, hey, Maddie came and told me I need to read this book, so let's go to the library and get it or we go buy it. So funny because like, you're 10. You know, I don't remember any of that. It's so funny.
I'd say no to buying my kids all sorts of things because, you know, kids are always asking for stuff. But when they're like, can we go to Barnes & Noble? It's real hard for me to say no. I'm just like, fine.
We go all the time. I don't always buy them something one of my kids she really enjoys what we give her to read, but if we let her pick out stuff by herself it's gonna be trash.
My mom's really fun. I mean, she's down a few weeks ago, she took, you know, of course she wants to spoil the kids in her own way, but they went to a toy store and then Parnassus here in town. And she gave them a limit at the toy store.
Yep.
Right. Like $30, something like that. And limit at the bookstore.
Nice.
$100 they walked out with, which is not many books at Parnassus, though. You know, that's a trick. But it was so funny. She's like, nope, if you really want it. I said, be reasonable. She was trying to tell them. But I think she spent between both of them maybe like $150.
Should do a trade off next time. You think you can get one toy for up to $25 at whatever toy store, or you can get anything you want at the bookstore
that is books.
Imagine having like
I'm thinking of like a real bookstore, Barnes and Noble's half a toy store.
That's true.
That's a good point.
Cool. So cool, guys.
Fun episode.
Yeah, this was fun. This is fun. I think this is a good conversation. And do you want to share anything you're reading right now?
I'm starting Doris Kearns Goodwin's Leadership in Turbulent Times, which just came out, which she focuses on all of the presidents she has written about: Teddy Roosevelt, Lincoln, Lyndon Johnson. And who's the fourth? Teddy Roosevelt, Lincoln, Johnson. I feel like I'm missing someone really obvious. Oh, FDR. There you go. So, yeah, I'm excited to read that. Yeah. I mean, just really just starting this weekend. There you go.
Very nice.
How long is that book?
It's not as long as you would think. It's
because some of her books are 300 substantial.
No, it's like 300 pages. It's not bad. You know, of course, there's like 70, 80 pages worth of just notes and everything else. So, yeah. There you go.
It's like fake 300 pages. That's my favorite kind.
I know. They look awesome on the shelf. You know what I'm talking about?
It's like you get a comp. Like, you feel so accomplished.
Yeah. It was 230 pages.
No. Yep. It was a birthday request.
There you go.
Absolutely.
There you go.
All right. What do y'all got?
Well, in the spirit of the conversation we've been having, I am nearing the end of reading A Wind in the Door. It's the second in the Wrinkle in Time quintet. I'm actually reading it to my daughters. And we, you know, life is very busy, so we probably only read together like once a week.
Yeah.
So it takes a while to get through these.
Better than most.
But I forgot how A Wrinkle in Time, so I'd read it once when I was a kid and mostly forgotten it, and read it again on my own a couple years ago and was blown away.
Yeah.
And so then I read that one to my kids and now reading this one, and it's much more sort of conceptual and twisty than the first one. Like it gets a little weird and my kids sometimes look and they're like, wait, what is she talking about?
Yeah.
But they're just pretty brilliant books. And she just had a genius imagination woven in with sort of just this pretty remarkable way of positioning good versus evil, and as you know, in terms of villains and good, you know, villains and heroes or heroines in her stories. Yeah. So Wind in the Door is really good.
Cool.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I just actually finished up just a fun thing, Super Sons Volume 3. So it's actually about the sons of Batman and Superman, and their team up adventure.
Who are the moms?
The moms. Yeah, so Lois Lane is.
Wow.
Look, they're married now.
Is it a redhead kid?
No, I'm not questioning that. Whoa.
Nope.
That's right.
Just gotta make
Batman,
sure.
Yeah, who's Batman's lady friend?
That one's a little more complicated.
Whoa.
It's Talia al Ghul is the mother of this child.
You're implying that.
As in Ra's al Ghul's daughter or something? That's a little Romeo and Juliet thing
there's
going on.
It's
there.
A complicated
a Montague and Capulet.
It's a complicated history because Al Ghul wanted him as his heir, and he said no. So
wow.
So there's an Alan Jackson song called "A House with No Pictures."
Sure.
I feel like maybe you should read a book with no pictures.
I read plenty of books with no pictures.
But you don't ever talk about those.
Not today.
But you should do more with books with no pictures.
I do.
This is me challenging you like your friend did, that you should read more fiction.
I literally just told
you. He is reading Peace Like a River.
This is a broad.
Peace Like a River.
This is a broad.
Hey, Whipple, squeeze this.
I don't say that anymore.
The Dignity Revolution.
I'm going to report you.
Okay.
To human resources, if you say squeeze this one more time.
Whipple, squeeze this. I feel like Lifeway's security system is going to go out.
Yeah, it sounds like they should just put purple nurple in the title.
Whipple, squeeze this.
It's playing on playing on some ad slogans, so.
Goodbye.
Fine, yes.
Okay. All right.
That's
it. I'm going to leave it at that. All right.
Yeah. Not saying another word about it.
All right. I don't really know where to go.
We're all done for today. So.
Yeah, I think so.
We're done.
Yeah. All right. So, guys, thanks for listening. Guys, thanks for hanging out. And we'll talk to everybody next time.
Hanging out.